Second hour, welcome in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rex Road here with Adam Vigan in for Robbie Stanley. Michelle Knezovic behind the glass. And we're happy to walk in our good friend and frequent guest, Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, how are you doing? Or do you have all the feels, all the excitement about that preseason Titans opener coming up this week?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Counting down the minutes. I think it'd be just good. We've got, what, like 4 or 5 days without the morning practices over at the Titans? Because you'd started to get in that routine of, you know, every morning, so we get a little break now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's I don't remember it being, yeah, like it's, because I'm used to the day before a travel day, but it's interesting, like it's a day off today, then that travel day, then the game. So, yeah, a few days away from practice. What is the absolute number one thing you are most interested in watching? Granted, we don't know exactly who is and isn't playing. Mike Vrabel never says that for a game, never will. We have an idea, though, of some obvious guys who won't play, but what's the number one thing you're interested in Thursday?
I mean, there's some nuts and bolts type things in terms of special teams and other stuff, but really what I'm interested in, I mean, it's got to be Malik Willis, right? I think that's what, going into the preseason, everybody kind of said, it's going to be more interesting just because he's here, and I think it will be. I truly don't know what to expect out of him in this game, because for all the hand-wringing over his play so far in the preseason and some of his struggles, which I think are pretty common for any rookie, I think there's a chance he'd go out there and light it up. I do. He's a talented guy, and I think in a preseason game atmosphere where things are pretty simplified on both sides of the ball, I think he could do pretty well. And at the same time, we've seen some struggles so far in camp, so it could go that way too. So it actually does create a sense of drama a little bit in anticipation about what we're going to see, to have a big-name quarterback prospect on the team this year. And, you know, and I'm also interested in how much he's going to play versus Logan Woodside.
No, I agree. I assume, I'm just going to guess, Woodside gets first half and Willis gets the second half. I could be wrong. And maybe as time goes on, maybe Willis gets more than that in one of these, like in the third game or something. But I'm with you. I'm fascinated too, because, you know, one thing that doesn't come into play, right, out on the practice field is that when at times when he does, break the pocket, he can make big plays. I mean, you know, they just blow the play dead. I could see that happening. And like you said, he makes some throws that are wow throws. A big time strength on his arm, but also some touch on some of his deep balls, things like that. I could see him making big plays. And like you said, I mean, we've seen some, you know, stretches of struggles. Do you detect progress from him from the start of camp to now?
Maybe a little bit. It's still play to play, sure. And you know, look, I understand the concern at this point in camp and the fact that he's thrown some picks and, you know, he'll go through stretches and 2-minute drills where he throws 7 straight incomplete passes. I mean, that does happen. But at the same time, as you said, the talent's there. I mean, look, this guy is sharp. He's instinctive in some of what he can do. He can really sling it, and he can move. There's a lot to work with there. And, you know, and in the situation he's in right now, there is no pressure on him. He's not competing for anything. He's going to take a redshirt year. I think everybody knows that. So I like the mentality of the kid, and that he doesn't really seem to hold on to things when he makes mistakes. He seems to let it go and move on. And I think he really does have a good grasp on, you know, just what it takes mentally to play the position, in terms of, you know, having a short memory and having confidence no matter what happens. He seems to have had that. So I think you get him in a game situation, and I'm curious to see, as you said, when you're not blowing plays dead on touch sacks and things like that, and he's able to really make some plays, I think he can do it.
Gentry Estes of the Tennessean joining us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Gentry, I was listening to Jared and Caroline yesterday, and Jared and Caroline spent a considerable amount of time on their show yesterday talking about what they think is an attitudinal shift in Ryan Tannehill's makeup, so to speak. Jared specifically pointing out there was a lot less we and more me in the conversations that he was having with reporters. And he mentioned that he talked to you about it. He brought it to your attention, and that he said after Tannehill's news conference yesterday that you kind of picked up on it. I'd be curious for your thoughts if you if now that you've noticed it, if you do believe there is a shift in mentality for Ryan Tannehill.
You know, it's a good question. I'll give Jared credit on this, because usually when especially when it involves that particular player, I've kind of learned to kind of tune it out with Jared. But in this one, no, he was right. He had kind of picked up on a few comments. And we're talking about word choice here more than anything, just saying my guy as opposed to our team, you know, things like that. It's a small change, but it does demonstrate some sort of ownership. And then he mentioned that to me at practice. So when Tannehill spoke with us afterwards, I was watching for it, and I saw it. He was right. And I do think it's somewhat of a change there. Now, I don't know really where that comes from in terms of, you know, did somebody tell him to do that? Is that something he decided to do that? Is it a mental shift in some way? I don't know. But when Jared did ask Tannehill, you know, are you basically making more of an effort to hold guys accountable, he said, yeah. And I think you've noticed it. You noticed it on the field with him. I mean, I know it got a lot of attention that he jumped on Kyle Phillips after a route a few practices ago. And but I'll be honest, in terms of what I've seen on the field, Tannehill's always done that. I saw him do that to Mason Kinsey last year. And there's been a couple of other times. I've always believed he's a bit more of a leader than he gets credit. Just because he's not, you know, demonstrative about it out there. But I think he's always kind of been a leader. But when, to be fair, when the player was asked, he said, yeah, he's doing more of it, which was an interesting answer.
Your latest column on the Tennessean, Estes, : how worried should we be about the Titans' offensive line? So let me ask you, Gentry, how worried should we be about the Titans' offensive line?
Pretty worried. usually when you get to that kind of headline, you know where you're going. I mean, to me, that's the clear concern out of camp. And honestly, I think it's been a good camp. If you look position by position on both sides of the ball, I think the Titans are doing pretty well. They're pretty solid, especially on defense. But I think one of the reasons for that is when you look at how they're investing resources against the salary cap, they're spending a lot more money on their defense now than they were maybe a year or two ago. Most notably, you switched off a big salary for Roger Saffold and gave it to Harold Landry. And that strategic decision, I think, is really going to help the defense. I think you're paying a lot for the edge rushers. You've really geared up in the secondary. I think the cornerback position is better than people think it is, and there's a lot of really good young players there right now. And I think that just the defensive front's going to kind of carry this team. The trade-off to that, under salary cap, you're not going to check every box. You're going to have to prioritize certain positions. And in the past, I think the Titans prioritize the offensive line. They're not now. I think they were third in the league in spending on the O-line just last season, and now they're in the bottom half of the league, and that's mostly off the Saffold move. And I think, you know, that's a concern to me. When I look at the line, you've got two of the five spots right now being manned by players who were on the team last year and not good enough to start. And, you know, so why is this year different where they are good enough? Well, it's because they don't have as good of players. So I think that to me is a concern.
No, well, I totally agree. It's the top concern. I thought so going into camp, although I thought it would actually get competition from receiver. I feel different about that now. But I guess I could play. Well, see, they have prioritized it in the draft, right? And that's the idea, is to have some lower cost good players. But the question is, do you have good players? I guess I could. My sunshiny counter would be, LaJuan's not coming off an ACL. Nate Davis looks like he's in better shape, and he had COVID a couple times last year, and he had all kinds of issues. You know,
I think it was sneaky important to bring back Ben Jones, given what else they're having to do up front.
Yes,
actually.
Yeah. So that 60% could be better than last year what it was. Although, you know, I still expect Ben Jones. You know, the poor guy is going to limp you know, every few minutes, no matter what's going on.
He just had to have some stability, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no doubt.
And I'll buy Aaron Brewer at this point at left guard. I know he's undersized. I know that's kind of the book on him. I think he is a good fit for what the Titans want to do. He kind of made that case, and I believe him. They need a right tackle, though.
And yeah,
I'm sure it's been well discussed on your show at this point that I think if you were to poll all of us who go out there every day, what's the position that concerns you the most, we might all say right tackle.
Yeah, so right now, and it does look, I mean, every time, you know, one of those two guys, Dylan Radins or Nicholas Petitfrere, is in there, you know, key moment, I'm like, the tide may be turning, but it looks really right now like it's an absolute back and forth. What's your sense for that? How about I ask you for a prediction? Opening day, who's starting at right tackle?
Honestly, a guy who isn't on the team right now.
Spicy.
Intrigue.
Spicy.
It
can't be Kendall Lamb because the Lions just signed him.
I mean, at this point, the Titans would have loved nothing more than for Dylan Radins to take that job and sprint away with it. That is exactly what they would have wanted. And we get a week into camp, and now all of a sudden it's regressed, and he's splitting reps with a guy who just got here. Petitfrere might be doing wonderfully. He might be. And it might be a sign that he was maybe a little better than we thought, and he's ready to go. And if so, then that's great for the Titans. But that's not what this felt like to me. This felt like to me Radins wasn't doing what they wanted him to do to take charge of the job. And now they're kind of searching a little bit. So if they're still searching after final cuts, they'll probably find someone on the waiver wire and come in and do it.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. That's another thing, Thursday, of course. Those two guys, how much do they play? Who gets what reps? And then we'll be scrutinizing every play. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, always a great guest. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. And when we get back on Robbie and Rex, we will react to some of what he said and get back into that area, the area of concern on the Tennessee Titans. On Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. And we got tickets to give away. I just realized this, Michelle. So, Pilgrimage Festival, September 24th, 25th, at the park at Harlandsdale Farm in Franklin. And by the way, a friend texted me yesterday, someone from Better Than Ezra started this tournament. I got tournament on the brain. Got a rant coming up. So I guess they would be a consistent element. But artists include Chris Stapleton, Brandi Carlile, the Avett Brothers, John Batiste, and more.
Better Than Ezra.
Better Than Ezra is part of the more. So what do we think, Michelle?
Let's do caller number 5.
Caller number 5, 2 tickets to the Pilgrimage Festival. Here we go.
Can you read the text you just got during the break about your Mike 1 skills?
Yeah, so, I'll go on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. And Mike from Nashville, first of all, said, please don't give Bobo Stillman any more credit.
Okay, sorry.
I'm going to, you know, Stillman likes to say Bobo, which is something, honestly, a word like I never use, but it's like his word for Homer. And I contend that, and I told him this too, to his face the other day. I said, you are the number one Bobo in town. Now, he thinks Bobo is like Homer, everything's like always take the positive spin. No. To me, if you are as emotionally invested as he is, and it turns into like this over the top criticism sometimes, see, that to me is actually Bobo behavior. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. There's another word that he likes to use that I don't know the origin of, Scarbini, which I think is his word for like a replacement level player, like just a guy.
Oh, okay.
For me, that word is scrub. Like that's the word my dad would use.
Yeah.
is scrub, like a guy that just sits at the end of the bench and gets in garbage time. So I don't know where – I mean, when he said Scarbini, is like, is he trying to think of Brian Scalabrine, who was kind of scrubbish?
New Jersey Nets sharpshooter Brian Scalabrine. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that one. I guess I need to.
I'd also like to we don't want to give Jared enough credit. We don't want to give Jared too much credit. I do have to say, and I know that she took some heat for this yesterday, Caroline was trying to reference Bjork and called her Bjorn.
Oh, well, there's Bjorn Bork.
Yes, tennis player, right?
Great tennis player. Bjork, the artist.
Yes, she was very looking underrated. For Bjork, and she called her Bjork. Bjorn.
Please tell me the context of talking about Bjork.
They were talking about campy fashion. I don't know.
Oh, that's a good.
It was like when Caroline, like Michelle, is a little bit younger than us. You know, they're
you're literally not even that much older than us.
They're hip. They're cool. You know, Jared and I are the same age. We're not as cool as we used to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Meanwhile, the fossil over here
was called a 90s DJ on the text line.
So Mike from Nashville also said, listen to Joe fill in for Robbie is a throwback to 90s DJs, LOL.
I don't know.
I'm all for making fun, you know, like I need to work on my, hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Yeah. You know, but I don't know. I don't know what that means. What is a 90s DJ? What does that mean?
Casey Kasem?
So like Casey Kasem, I think of like 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah,
America Top 40.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
And it's too soon for Ryan Seacrest, you know, in the 90s. So I don't know who you're not like Howard Stern over there or anything like that. No offense.
Well, I mean, I sometimes flirt with FCC violations, but yeah, yes. Not really. So yeah, let us know what you mean there, Mike. I mean, I'm all for being ripped, believe me, for my Mike One work. And by the way, if you'd like to watch that amazing Mike One work, you can watch it streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live every day. Video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. So on the Titans front, I think Gentry hit on two key things. One, Malik Willis is the main attraction Thursday. However that goes, I'd be surprised if he doesn't quarterback a half of football. Maybe more. I guess it's conceivable they could give him more than Logan Woodside. I mean, they know what they have in Woodside. You want to get Woodside work? You want him ready to be the backup quarterback? He's going to be the backup quarterback. But if you know that now, and I think it's pretty clear, for anybody who's been out at camp, like if you've been watching this day after day after day, you don't really have any question anymore. And I was open to the idea. Malik Willis, could he leapfrog? Could he make a run and just – make it simple. Like, okay, here you go. Here's your backup potential competitor to start at some point, but he's your backup. It's not happening. It's not happening. Logan Woodside is going to be the number two quarterback this year.
Logan Woodside is fascinating to me in the sense that, like, if you had to look at backup quarterbacks throughout the league, like, and this would be such a weird conversation to have, but like, where would Logan Woodside rank among backup quarterbacks in the league?
Well, that's a good question, and I would say
league-wide,
he would be rated one of the lowest because no one who knows anything about him.
Exactly.
Right? But there are other backups who fit that bill.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, you know, Chase Daniel carved out – I mean, Chase Daniel is still active, right? I mean, the guy has carved out a fabulous career, like, in terms of – making money by being a competent backup quarterback. I mean, how many teams has Chase Daniel been on at this point? I mean, you know, he was on the Saints for a time. I think he was on the Bears. I think he was on the Chiefs. Like
it's amazing work if you can get it.
Exactly.
And you hope the starter stays healthy and you're good. You're in that QB room. You got the clipboard. You're helping out.
Yeah, backup quarterbacks become cult-like figures. I mean, think of Charlie Whitehurst when Charlie Whitehurst was here. Clipboard Jesus, if I recall correctly.
That's right. Oh yeah. Well, and sometimes they're the most popular, the backup goalie, the backup quarterback, most popular person in town. But interesting that you brought that up. Pro Football Network actually ranked the backup quarterbacks.
So who's the number one backup quarterback in the NFL according to?
You guess.
Well, you're going to have to really narrow it down.
My number one would have been Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
He's a pretty freaking good backup quarterback.
Went undefeated with the Saints a couple of years ago when Drew Brees was injured.
He was fine. He's been – and obviously, I think his career trajectory was different before the
injury.
Knee injury in Minnesota. Terrible knee injury.
He started in Denver last year, didn't he?
He had some starts.
Yeah.
Yes. They had him three.
Okay.
They have Taylor Heinicke of the Commanders, number one.
ODU product, Old Dominion University.
That's right. That's right, baby. Little Virginia. Both of us high school, Virginia, state of Virginia high school products.
Heinicke started some games. You know, I think, yeah, that would have been a good one.
So Minshew, two.
Yeah.
And, you know, Foles with the Colts is a pretty good one for us. So bring it all the way down to, I mean, so the thing is, once you start getting into, there's your guy Chase Daniel at 15.
Where is he playing
once
now?
You start getting into.
Where's Daniel now?
He's with the Chargers.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. My guy, my buddy Brian Hoyer, I covered his recruitment in like 04, 03 maybe.
Is he still with the Patriots?
He's with the Patriots.
Yeah.
So then you start getting into, again, when you get to the second half of these ratings, you start getting into names that you just don't know. Or you're surprised they're still in the league.
Yeah, Logan Woodside, you know? I mean, I don't know much about him as a football player. You never really want your backup quarterback to have to go into a game, but you know, God forbid something were to happen to Ryan Tannehill. Like, how would you feel if Logan Woodside had to start a game? Is it better or worse than when Blaine Gabbert had to start that win and get in game against the Colts?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because with
at least Gabbert, he had starting experience.
Yeah,
Blaine
Gabbert had some good moments in the league. Obviously, he was a big disappointment relative to his draft status coming out of Missouri. When people, you know, just like most of these high picks at quarterback, he was not close to what he was supposed to be. But he was still seen as a pretty big upgrade over Matt Cassel, and I think he was. So I would say there's a big difference there. Again, you're talking about a guy who hasn't started. You want to know how disrespected Logan Woodside is?
How disrespected?
Well, I'll go down to 32. This is Mike Kay doing this for Pro Football Network. He ranks Nate Sudfeld of the Niners as the number 32 backup, right above Sean Mannion of the Vikings and Tim Boyle of the Lions. I mean, this is the territory we're talking about with backups. The Tennessee Titans backup is ranked 26th in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And who is that? According to Mike Kay, it's Malik Willis. So there you go. I mean, Logan Woodside is so disrespected, he's a complete afterthought to media who cover the NFL. But here's the thing. I know it's practice, but I've seen a lot of Logan Woodside practice.
Mm-hmm.
He's not bad.
Right.
I mean, if he was terrible, then they would have moved on. They brought in people to take that job.
Who was the quarterback they drafted from Hawaii a couple of years ago that they like late in the draft that they
was it McDonald? Cole McDonald.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of those take a flyer. It was,
yeah.
But probably should have done something else with that one. But they brought in Trevor Siemian. They've brought in Matt Barkley.
Yeah,
they brought in different people.
Trevor Siemian to me is like the. You know, my Saints had to deal with him starting games last year, but Trevor Siemian to me is like the quintessential backup quarterback. I mean, I know he did start in Denver, but
that's the thing. He started before here, he started after here.
Yeah.
And
now I think he's
against
the
Titans.
He's in Chicago now.
But he comes in here and look, rep after rep after rep, he was not close to Logan Woodside. So
I forgot that he was here. Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, when he came here, I'm sure I said it on this show and wrote it, but. It was like, okay, well, the Titans have upgraded it back up. No, they didn't. So, to answer your question, the way this team's built, especially I think this year, I mean, they've trended, like Gentry Estes said last segment, the investment in defense has gone up. They've prioritized that. I mean, they're paying a lot for two edge rushers between, you know, they decide to pay Landry. They obviously paid Bud Dupree big last year. Jeffrey Simmons is coming soon. You know, so you got a lot of investment. It's a defensive team. It's a running team. So with a Logan Woodside, who definitely is a classic backup quarterback, game manager, knows everything about the offense. I mean, look, he gets after people out there in the practice field just like Tannehill does, by the way. And I don't know that I buy – well, we don't have time to totally get into that, but that's a good discussion.
I do want to say before we go to break, Chase Daniel has been in the league since 2010. Has played for six teams and started five games.
It's a beautiful life. Just keep getting those big paychecks, man. It's a beautiful life. No, but Woodside is the guy who can come into me in a game or two. If you're, Tannehill has let's say a short-term injury, and he can come in and do enough to cobble together a win for you. You know, Like, do you want him in, like, that Blaine Gabbert situation? Like, win an in-game? No. You don't. And I don't think long-term, you know, I've said this before. If there's, like, a long-term injury to Tannehill, I guess it depends on where the team is exactly then, how much season is left. But that might be where you go to Malik Willis and say, okay, there you go. You learn on the fly in real games with real game plans. You're going to play some teams that have a lot at stake for them. So let's see what you can do. But short term, Logan Woodside's perfect to me, like game manager type. And I just, again, we haven't seen much of him in games, of course, but preseason games, you get to see him again this year. I think you can see that he's improved a ton. The first glimpses of him here a few years ago, I would not have guessed he'd still be in the league right now. But and credit to him for what he's done.
And rarely do teams end up in the situation that the Titans were in 3 years ago, where you have Ryan Tannehill as a backup quarterback.
Well, yeah. You know, it's still...
I know he was coming off of an injury, and in his time in Miami had ended unceremoniously, but you rarely find that caliber of quarterback available to be a backup quarterback.
For a fourth-round pick where you can dump a lot of his salary back on his old team, pretty sweet deal for the Titans, John Robinson. When we come back, I'm going to stick with quarterbacks because I do want to get back into that Tannehill idea that we discussed with Gentry Estes. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Just gonna let it play.
I'm waiting for Olivia's part.
Oh, sorry. I was just like, what are we doing here?
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 125 1063 Game from the Hillside Medical Game Studio.
There you go.
Yes, there's Olivia. So we're kind of going backward. I like that. I still have to text you. I got some key songs we got to play from Olivia.
Okay. Yeah,
some absolute bangers.
This is
if
Jared's
they're deep
worst
cuts.
Nightmare.
I'm not playing them.
What's that?
I said if they're deep cuts, no.
They are absolute bangers. Don't you got to trust me?
She's had enough hits.
You got to trust me. Well, she's got a ton of hits. Absolutely. All right, I'd like to, before we get back into the Titans, I'd like to ask this question. What does $20 buy you today? It might buy you a trip to the ice cream store with your kids, maybe tickets to a Sounds game, movie ticket, a little bit to spare for popcorn. $20 also will buy a brand new pair of athletic shoes for a homeless child in Middle Tennessee. Yes, $20. That's it. And we're on a mission to help the thousands of homeless children start the school year with a new pair of shoes. Will you join me in that effort? It is a very worthwhile effort. All you got to do is text DONATE to 615-737-1025. Throw in $20. More if you'd like. But $20 is all it will take to make a huge difference in the life of a child. Again, text DONATE 615-737-1025 right now. Let's make that first day of school even more special for these kids. Thank you so much for your support. Back in here, talking Titans, and Adam, I want to go back on Ryan Tannehill. Because I will say, first of all, I did not hear the segment that Gentry referenced with Jared and Caroline talking about that. I do know that Jared seems to be on this really obsessive thing about pronouns, like saying like my instead of talking third person, I or talking second person. I don't know about you, I talk second person a lot, and I write it actually. I probably write second person more than I should, but it's like you know what I mean. It's like, you know, you're trying to get healthier, you're trying to lose weight, but you still eat a whole pizza at night. I'm not talking about anybody in particular. I'm just saying, like, for example, second person. You know what I mean? Like talking second person as opposed to I feel this. I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Jared's on that kick, but he may have a point on Ryan Tannehill and how he is saying things. I tend to agree, though, with Gentry. And I've been asking questions to this effect of various teammates of Tannehill because I'm writing something about Tannehill for down the road here for The Athletic. About leadership, about any sort of difference in approach, being more assertive. Maybe, you know, anything like that. And I got to say, I don't think there's a huge difference. I don't. Now, I think there's obviously a difference in the outside view of him. And if there's that big of a difference, I don't care who you are. I don't care how insulated you try to make yourself. Like, you know, you notice, you know that somewhere in there it affects you. I mean, he's conscious of that. But I agree with Gentry. I think Ryan Tannehill has been a very good leader all along. I think one of the things that Mike Vrabel liked about that switch going back in 2019 was just automatically having a more vocal guy in that position. We know who Vrabel was used to being around. That is right. Yeah, Vrabel knows well that Brian Hoyer will get after somebody, including Brady. Like, what are you doing, Tom? But that wasn't Mariota. We know that. Mariota struggled with that. At times, he could come out of him, but it wasn't consistent. I think Tannehill's pretty natural at that. Maybe he's not Brady or Manny or guys who just absolutely probably can only go at guys if you're that level of player, right? You know, I mean, Manny was a guy, go back to his time with the Colts, he got into some stuff with teammates. He would go off. And Brady, too. He'd scream at his OC or whatever. But those are also a couple of the top quarterbacks to ever play football, right? I think Tannehill has been very good. I did notice the Kyle Phillips thing. We talked about it on the show already. He really got after him last week on a route. Then, you know, it's like same sort of route later, goes to him. He runs it. You know, it's like you see it pay off. But I don't think there's actually that big of a difference with Tannehill. I think ultimately, again, it's still just going to come down to, you know, him handling those moments when they come. But you got to earn the moment in January, and that's going to be a lot on him too.
Yeah, I think in general, when it comes to when we think about leadership in sports specifically, you know, we have a frame of reference. We think of, you know, Tom Brady is a perfect example. You know, Tom Brady, you know, he's no Dan Fouts, but he's
Thank you.
But Tom Brady, you know, he is a, put it lightly, a fiery competitor. And I think that sometimes we as sports fans, not just, you know, media people, but sports fans conflate that edge with good leadership.
Good point.
In the sense that if a player is not screaming at his teammates and demanding excellence in a showy way. I mean, you know, we all watched The Last Dance during the outset of the pandemic. And Michael Jordan is in a tier of his own when it comes to leadership. You know, you can question his leadership. Yeah. But
borderline psychotic behavior.
Right?
Yeah.
But he would get after guys and he wanted to pick up guys and bring them to his level, even if, quite frankly, not, you know, no one could really be at his level. But he, you know, he was trying to lift the potential of his teammates by getting in their face, challenging them, you know, belittling them if he had to in order to do it. And I think generally in sports, we think, let's use the Predators as an example. Roman Josi publicly is a very mild-mannered guy. So was Shea Weber. So was Mike Fisher. But, you know, and I mean, I don't know how many times I fielded questions from Predators fans about the leadership qualities of the captains because, you know, Shea Weber.
When things are starting to go poorly.
Yeah, Shea Weber, right? Wasn't, you know, flipping over Gatorade coolers and screaming at, you know, his teammates in the dressing room. Like, you can be a good leader without being demonstrative. And I think with Tannehill, because Tannehill is, you know, from what I gather, a pretty, like I just used, mild-mannered individual. Like, you know, when he's up at the podium, you know, and things of that nature. And I know that's sort of a manufactured environment because they're in front of the cameras. But when you see instances of him on the field, you know, getting after rookies and demanding that, you know, correcting mistakes, that's a good thing. But I think oftentimes, you know, we've all been guilty of this. We conflate, you know, yelling with leadership. Like, if you're not yelling, if you're not jabbing your finger in your teammate's chest, you're not a good leader. That's inaccurate.
No, that's a great point, and I think that I think you have to have some level of being able to hold people accountable if you're in that position. Like, if you're a quarterback, you know, a point guard, captain of a hockey team. Like, you have to be able to do it however you do it. You know, you have to be able to – you can't leave everything to coaches. Every single coach in the world in any sport will tell you, like, if there isn't some player policing and accountability, like, within them, like, we're screwed because the coaches can't do it all. You know, and there's just there's just something different about one of your peers who you're playing with on the field or on the court holding you accountable. But you're right. There are also people who scream and yell who aren't great leaders because, like, they're not respected or right. They don't actually have good relationships with people, right?
I'm trying to think of who comes to mind when I think about that.
I mean, look, so here's something that just came to mind for me. I know people love when I bring up Michigan State, but I covered Draymond Green's 4 years in college. He was always loud, always aggressive. I'd say early in his career, he wanted to be that kind of guy. But he wasn't. First of all, he wasn't yet a great player, but also some of his teammates didn't really like that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he came on too strong, which, if you know him, everybody knows who he is now in the NBA. That probably isn't surprising. He got to his senior year, you know, when he was just a tremendous all-around player. Big Ten Player of the Year. He won a national player. He was amazing as a player, but also he had figured out that, you know, it can't just be always yelling. This guy, you yell at him, he shuts down.
Right.
So yell at that guy, you're hurting yourself. I mean, this brings me to parenting too. Like, different kids are different. Kids are different. So that's part of the nuance of it, is how you got to be able to, like, pull people aside and actually, you know, like, have people over at your barbecue like Tannehill did, and have real relationships.
Like, we don't know what Ryan Tannehill is like in the quarterback room when they're watching film. We don't know what
he's probably not yelling and raving.
Right.
Yeah.
This is why we need Hard Knocks to come to Tennessee. I mean, we need to see this.
If they actually allow them in the room, that's the problem with Hard Knocks these days.
Yeah, but, you know, we don't know. You know, we can ask his teammates. We can ask him. You know, they can, you know, they'll probably speak in generalities, I'm sure, as you've asked people about that for your upcoming story. I'm sure you're getting a lot of that. You're looking for specific examples. You're probably, you know, you may have gotten some, but you're probably not getting as much as you want. Because trust me, I've written those stories too, and it's hard when you're trying to peel back the curtain and really look at a guy when no one else is around. But you know, I think because of how last season ended, not just the game, but I know that Tannehill's news conference after the game, you know, struck a nerve with fans because he didn't take accountability for the loss. And then he did not speak to reporters on the last day of availability. That did not sit well with people.
Yeah, didn't sit well with me.
So, so there is an expectation that he should, you know, this is not a good term, but it's the only one I can think of at the top of my head, man up. And I think that's why, you know, like I said yesterday, everything he does is going to be microanalyzed this season. And it comes down to even how he talks to his teammates on the practice field.
Yeah. No, I agree. And look, I think since then, and, you know, he came a little late and he had the press conference and people freaked out about the mentor thing.
The picture of him on the boat with the energy drink or whatever.
Yeah. Since then.
The renovations at his house, you know, whatever.
Right. It was a little bit rocky. But he's done the right thing since then. He's played well. He's leading well. But I think he's led internally about the same way the whole time. Texter on the text line, driven by WisconsinHoney.com, unnamed, says, authenticity is key to leadership. Don't be an in-your-face leader if you never have been before. Be authentic. People will respect that and follow. Agree.
Yes.
And if you get pissed off, it's okay to say it. You do want people to, at times, say, especially with young members of a team, like, hey, like, you know, this is how you do things correctly. And it's okay to say it aggressively. But, yeah, you got to also actually get to know people.
Yeah, not everybody's going to be Ray Lewis. That there's an example of a guy that's, you know, in your face. Not everybody's going to be Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's one way of being a leader. But it's not the only way to be a leader.
And frankly, I think just like with coaching, I think it's probably going to be less frequent and common moving forward. You know,
oh yeah, I think kids are a lot more sensitive these days, Joe.
Yes,
I'm sure you've noticed that.
Yes, they are. Speaking of sensitive, I've got a Rex rant. I'm very upset about this. Coming up, Robbie and Rex showed 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ooh, that's a good choice. Oh, that's a... Man, I did not expect this horrific song to greet me. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3. That game from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic. Absolutely getting under my skin with that song that needs to. Now...
I need you fired up, Rex Road.
I mean, that is, like, don't we have a consensus, Vingan, that most people don't want that?
I think so. I think
it's time for a change.
I think that, you know, it's not as played as it was a few years ago, but it remains, and you know, I think it's time to put that one to bed.
Hot take. I kind of like it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you also think it's cringy to watch Office Space, so.
True.
Did you watch Office Space?
She says it's cringy. 5 minutes of it is cringy. It's like one of the best comedies ever made.
It is a
Help me.
It is a fabulous movie.
Help me. Cringy. It's cringy to hear you say that. That's cringy.
You watched 5 minutes, and it was cringy.
Like, the first 5 minutes, he's, like, in traffic.
And then...
You know, he's trying to, like, get in the plane. Like, okay.
And Michael Bolton is rapping, and then, you know, someone pulls up alongside of him, and he turns it down, and he rolls up his window.
Oh, God, it's so great. Please. Please, Michelle. Please. All right. I got something else for you guys, too. Okay. And look, I think this has already been a rant. It's probably going to be a rant again, okay? But this is something we all need to join together on, okay? I really think that this is something that the sports public in this country can agree on, okay? We keep getting little warning signs. We got another one yesterday. I want to just tell you something. If some clueless idiot walking necktie really thinks it's a good idea that the NCAA tournament gets rid of automatic bids and becomes a power tournament invitational, that person or those people need to be called out by name. They need to be set straight. They need to be shamed. They need to be identity thefted. They need to be doxed, trolled, muted, blocked, reported. Anything that can be done, they cannot be allowed to win, okay? They cannot be allowed to mess with our best tournament. They cannot be allowed to rip the soul out of it. Okay? And I'll give you this effing rant every effing day and say effing so many effing times that I'll probably finally get a violation. This is not happening. So every ounce of power we have, everybody who is a fan of this tournament, we need to band together. This is the reason that I'm all mad about this. So this is a television report from Wink Television near Florida Gulf Coast, okay? Zach Oliveri talked to the athletic director the president, FGCU, Dunk City. All remember that.
Yes.
President Mike Martin. So this is what Mike Martin told him, quote, March Madness will become much more controlled by a handful of schools. Automatic qualifiers that we now get from being in the A-Sun will disappear, end quote. And there's a lot more comments like that. You know, what's our budget? Maybe 15, 16 million a year. What's the budget at LSU? 200 million, pretty close, right? You know, obviously a lot of this is part of a discussion about everything that's going on with realignment and all this stuff. Football, the conferences. We're going to talk to Chris Vanini later. We got, I mean, the Big Ten now is going to take CBS. That SEC intro music, that's going to be Big Ten games. Big Ten, not going to be on ESPN. It's going to be a line in the sand. A lot of stuff going on. But my God. Okay, so in this studio, either by fan or alumni, we have represented Kentucky, Duke, Michigan State. Okay?
And Syracuse.
And Syracuse. There you go. Okay, so there's four of the biggest brands in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So would you like to see an NCAA tournament of just Power 5 teams?
No.
Michelle,
absolutely,
would you like to see it?
Absolutely not.
And your listen, team just got smoked by St. Peter's.
As much as I hate, like, that's what makes it so special. They're going to ruin
I mean, the fact that he even has the oxygen it has at this point, is just, it's really disturbing to me.
I mean, think about the fabulous stories that we've had. We've had St. Peter's most recently. We had Loyola Chicago, Butler. I mean, think about Gonzaga. I mean, if not for the NCAA tournament, we would know nothing of Gonzaga. Now, Gonzaga has turned into a power team. It's not in a power conference, but they have turned into a power team that can't win the big one. But the Gonzaga was a team in the late 90s, right? That who knew who Gonzaga was?
Casey Calvary and absolutely
Davidson with Steph Curry,
Butler. VCU,
Golden Retrievers,
George Mason.
So these teams have made runs, and then you just have the one time, right? You have the Maryland, UMBC, all this stuff.
Yes, UMBC.
The thing that it's not just the tournament; it's entire seasons built on the dream of making it.
Yeah,
the communities that are sewn together by this understanding that there is a prize at the end where one of these teams in this little conference in these smaller towns where they put, they have 5,000-6,000 people at these games is going to get to go play North Carolina or Michigan State or whoever. And it's just these asshats. I mean, I seriously cannot believe that they're even thinking about this crap. It makes me so mad, and it's not like I'm not going to let it happen. We can't let it happen. It has to be rebuked violently before it even gets started. Football drives the bus. Football's driving realignment. Things are going to be all mixed up and everything. But this tournament, you still have that.
I remember
it can't change.
I remember my freshman year in college was the first year that American University qualified for the NCAA tournament by winning the Patriot League. And they were a 15 seed. Actually playing Tennessee. They drew Tennessee a second seed, I think, in Birmingham. My roommate camped out outside the ticket office at AU. I think he was one of the first people to buy a ticket for that game and hopped on a charter bus from Washington, D.C. and drove to Birmingham to be at that game against the Volunteers. And that was a huge deal. I mean, I know that D.C. was used to having college basketball success because of Georgetown. And to an extent, even GW has had some good teams. But this was the first.
But there's a team that's out, too.
Right. But there is this was the first time. I mean, I was a senior in. I think a junior. Yeah, I think it was a junior in college when. Excuse me, junior in high school when George Mason made its run. And George Mason, of course, in Fairfax, Virginia. Even
my sister's alma mater.
Even back in the southern part of Virginia where I grew up. Like, it was a big deal when George Mason, when they beat UConn.
They beat Michigan State first, which was, right. And they got all the way to beating.
I think they beat Carolina, too.
They did in the second round, and UConn was the best team in college basketball.
And I think that game was in D.C. at the, I guess, then Verizon Center, and that was a huge deal when George Mason made it there. So, yeah, the soul of the tournament would be taken from us. If those stories, if it's just, it's Kansas and Kentucky and Duke and Michigan State and Gonzaga.
Well, now it'll be like, oh, wow, good job, Rutgers. Okay, yeah. Florida State. Okay. Like, no. Okay, they have bigger fan bases. Great. It's such an awful, awful idea. And I don't think it's going to happen. But, man, let's start getting mad right now. This is not done. This is just like, maybe this should be a weekly rant. Should we just?
I agree. I'm actually very, very mad about this right now. I think this needs to be Tuesday? I think that's good.
Every Tuesday. We need to seriously, I need to know names of people who actually think this. And how could you possibly get there? I need to know names. They need to be public figures. Anyway, that's the Rex rant. When we come back, we will have Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game.